This episode of our This Week in XR podcast is sponsored by Zapper. Zapper is one of the world's leading XR companies. Over the past 12 years, they've won numerous awards for memorable campaigns. They've democratized AR by making tools and SDKs that anyone can use. And they created Zapbox, the world's most affordable mixed reality headset. Most recently, Zapper worked with Unilever to create an enhanced QR code called Accessible QR, which enables packaged goods to speak to the blind and partially sighted. If you're thinking XR, give the team at Zapper a call or visit zapper.com to see how they can help you on your XR journey.
Wow, wow. Thank you. My name is Charlie Fink. I am the host of This Week in XR. I'm here with my co-host, Ted Shilowitz, and our dear friend, Joanna Popper, who has been a guest on the show over three times. We have 190 episodes in the can. We started talking to each other and recording it during the pandemic, and here we are, 190 episodes and 500,000 downloads later. So thanks to everybody for that. More people... Thank you. More people have come up to me at South by Southwest to talk about the podcast than they do about my books. So I guess the books are kind of old computer books, not in vogue.
Well, people seem to like what we're doing. They like this organic kind of feel of what we do and what we try and cover, what you write for Forbes, and then you and me and Roni, who'll maybe mysteriously show up in a moment or two to have to talk about.
Yes, Roni Abovitz, our other co-host, will be out in a moment. But this isn't This Week in XR. It's This Week at South by Southwest.
This Week at South by Southwest.
So I've got stuff prepared. Charlie, Ted, and Joanna take the stage. Charlie is elegantly dressed. Ted is wearing the same black T-shirt and jeans he's worn for 36 years. Joanna is beautiful and comfortably stylish as a... Oh, wait. That part I wasn't supposed to read.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what we liked at South by
Southwest. Yeah, right. This week. So this is our news segment, right? This is the part of the podcast that's the news segment. So you and I have obviously, and Joanna as well, are purveyors of these mediums, right? We enjoy them. We live and breathe them. And we've seen a couple of things. We saw a lot of great things, but a couple of things that were real standouts, right? What was one of the standouts for you?
Well, we tend to lurk about the XR experience area at the Fairmont, so we don't see everything South by Southwest. But it's impossible to drink the ocean. As I say about South by Southwest, you have FOMO even if you're here.
Correct.
Especially if you're here, because it's just not possible to do everything. But in the XR area, the problem with doing VR in a venue like this is throughput. You only have 6 hours, and you got to put through as many people as you can, but you've only got room for one or two headsets. The headsets need to be charged. So you don't get to see very many things, but there is an exception to that.
Right, which is fantastic, and we're both big fans of it.
Yes, it's called the Gold Key, and it's on the fifth floor at the Fairmont, and it is a room that is immersive. It has three big screens, but it is run locally by Stable Video. And Stable Video is they've got a series of pre-prompts, sort of fractured fairy tales, and then people add prompts to it, and then you sit in the sort of quasi-theater around the screens, and eventually you see how your contribution affected fundamentally the slideshow. That was something, very few things make me go, wow, at this point after 8 years of this. But that really...
Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, they did the creators, Matthew Niedenhauser and Mark DaCosta, they had Tulpomancer at Venice, which to me is a... What happens is you go into it, it asks you a series of questions, you type your answers, and then... In real time, and then you go into the next stage where you're in a VR headset, and in real time, it creates a personalized VR experience for you. And so that, to me, was a first glimpse of what the future of our entertainment will look like, where you have personalized entertainment that you help co-create, that the distance between creation and consumption continue to merge. And so they had that at Venice, and then they also had at Filmgate, which takes place in Miami, they had a piece, which I think is a precursor to Golden Key, where you became part of the part of the projection map. And it sounds like that's what
is
Golden Key.
Leave here and go over to the Fairmont. Everybody can see it at the same time. There are no throughput limitations. Yeah.
And if we haven't given you enough clues as to what we're talking about, this is demonstrating some of the creative power of artificial intelligence. Yeah. So what Joanna and I saw with the Topolmancer thing, in 6-7 months, watching the visual experience of how interesting and fascinating and kind of moment of crudeness and remarkable that was, plug into 6 months later with this thing called the Golden Key, and you will literally see like 25 years of progress in 6 months. It is remarkable, terrifying, and inspirational all at the same time.
We talk about AI on the podcast more than we talk about XR now. So Roni, our co-host, actually says that AI is exactly what XR has been waiting for.
It feels like we need. Do we need to bring him out? It feels like.
Yeah, but right. People are here to see Roni. Yeah, yeah. He's like the famous one.
Are there any other pieces you want to talk about that we?
Well, Eliza's piece, Astra, which is the follow-up to Spheres, is a must-see.
It's lovely.
It's lovely and powerful.
It has great mixed reality elements, and that's really what we're seeing now with the Quest 3, although there's not a lot of content. And for the Vision Pro, which Quest 3 and Vision Pro will share a lot of mixed reality experiences, and we just don't know what they're going to be like. I did see something called Impulse about ADHD in the XR experience area. It's not finished yet, although it's 30 minutes long, but it was one of the best uses of mixed reality that I have seen.
Did you get to see Chief that's actually on the Apple Vision Pro?
I saw Chief, yeah. And that's a good segue, because we're going to, I think, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, yes. You've got the...
We're here to talk about the Vision Pro.
The Apple Vision Pro. That's what you guys came to talk about, right?
So let's bring out our co-host,
yes.
Roni. He's obviously, everybody knows that he was the founder of Magic Leap and Mako Robotics. He's an inventor. He's a filmmaker, musician, and entrepreneur. He wanted me to mention...
Synthbee, his
new company. And so, Roni,
he's waiting
on,
in the wings.
Out
here.
Let's give him a welcome. Come on, Roni. Yeah.
Your chair's over there, sir. Yeah.
Is it safe? Could you really drive a Tesla?
Well,
could you drive a Tesla right now?
They got in trouble, but they did drive it.
Hell no.
Joanna Stern went skiing too.
All right, there we go.
On the bunny slopes.
So let's, before we snark out here, let's talk about what's great about the Vision
Pro. I'm going to go get one to hold.
Okay.
We have another one.
He's got a prop. I'll go first. When you put it on for the first time, it takes your breath.
Let's see how many people in the room have tried it.
Yeah, who's worn one? Oh, a lot of you.
All right, so that's a pretty big number. Yeah. it is, the first moment is a big... You know, so, then it starts to me, kind of, to be like an iPad, and that part of it works really well.
Yeah. So I actually have some notes, scarily enough, because I'm actually quite nervous about talking about this in public, because I've been sort of working with this thing in various iterations for a little while, and it's now out in the wild.
You worked at Apple. Ted's the biggest Apple fanboy I have ever met.
I am very much in Apple culture. And Apple lifestyle, like a lot of people are. I've started a number of companies and helped start a number of companies that were always connected to Apple in very robust ways, lots of connective tissue. So I want to start by telling you what I think is remarkable about this device in many ways, and great. And I'm curious if you all agree with me, as Roni is there in the process of using it as we go through this. The first thing is that Apple as a company, and this may be not a surprise to a lot of you, is actually not a specialist in innovation. You'll be very hard-pressed to find a product or a product category that Apple has started first. What Apple excels at is refinement and polish. They take things that are out in the wild that are kind of like...
We're going to argue about the refinement part.
Yeah, well, that's what we're going to talk about. Kind of like not quite there yet, and Apple puts a huge amount of resources into trying to figure out how something should work. And the great things about this device is that it is literally a Mac on your face, meaning it brings all the familiarity, if you're in a Mac ecosystem, that makes you feel really, really comfortable, that you can fire it up and understand it right away. And it brings all of that to your face. Mm-hmm. The display dynamics are fascinating and wonderful because it is a really smooth, beautiful, and the perception of high resolution is there. Later in the talk, if we have time, we'll go a little deep dive as to what's really going on with how Apple performs some really smart trickery around what you believe is resolution on your face that is different than the Quest 3, and we can discuss that in detail, but I don't want to spoil some of that.
Well, Joanna has been using the Vision Pro and talking about it on social media, so I'm interested in your perspective. Remember, this part of the show is good Vision
stuff.
Pro.
The good stuff.
You know, I like to say positive things generally.
Yes.
I would say there's five or six things that was really strongly impressed me when in my time using this headset. First, I will say, as an industry, we were just really, really, really excited. This day has finally come. I think we've been, you know, many of us who've been deep in this industry, which it looks like a lot of you here are, have just been. You know, we've been waiting and watching and waiting for Apple to join the XR party, right? And we've known about all the acquisitions that they've made and the acqui-hires they've made and many of our friends who went over there. The joke is always, we know what you did before. They can't say what they're doing now, but we know the types of things they're working on. So first, I'll just say generally, this is just an exciting time, and we're now only five or six weeks in, so it really hasn't.
Still pretty fresh.
It's really new. So one, you know, in my experience, the mixed reality, whether it's the perception or as Ted just mentioned, putting it on was phenomenal. That the crispness, the clarity, the fact that you could see through, it's not pixelated, the colors are bright, you can see really well. I mean, Roni was able to walk all the way from here to here. He missed my hand, but I think that was intentional. So that part just blew me away, and I'm sure it probably did for many of you as well. Second, the UX was you know, as it's one of the things that Apple does really well. So the UX was relatively easy, maybe not completely intuitive, but pretty close to, you know.
Once you get the hang of it, it's very easy.
It's very easy.
And if you use a Mac, it's very Mac.
Exactly.
Like, you get it.
Yeah, exactly. I will say the environments were phenomenal. So I think that's been one of, you know, a dream of many of us who worked in XR, where you're able to go from complete mixed reality where you see the world to going into a virtual reality experience. I'll call it all spatial computing, but so, you know, where you're in a world, doing email, watching a video, and all at the same time while you're surrounded by a beautiful lake.
So
which
those,
is really
so those are
beautiful.
Three great positive things. So I've said it's positive. So Roni, we're gonna call on you now. Before we go to the other side, and trust me, we are going to go to the other side.
The dark side.
Tell us some positive things about what you like about this. Now, remember, Roni is what we call the man in the arena, meaning we're all talking about it. Roni has built and was the founder of one of the most meaningful mixed reality companies ever created and has gone through his own journey. So with that in mind, let's let Roni talk to you about what's going on his face.
Positive things.
All good now, Roni. Nothing bad yet.
Positive things. Okay. Well, I'm in the middle of it right now, I think. It's happening somewhere. But Jon Favreau, I think, was executive producer of this thing called Encounter Dinosaurs, which I'm running right now, so there will be a large dinosaur. I thought that was incredibly well done.
So good.
That was great. So, and I know Favreau, he's amazing and has been playing with augmented and virtual reality, so I thought that part was just excellent. I'll probably leave it at that.
Okay.
All right. Well, then.
So
I
want to add. One or two things.
Please.
One of the things that is exciting to me is that there are 34 million, as of a year or two, Apple developers. And, you know, our developer community in XR is much smaller than that. And we have some amazing developers in our community. But the Apple developer community is just so large and with so much experience, and that already with this headset coming into the market, developers from that community have started, who've never ever built before for XR, have started to build for it. And so one of the apps, Juno, was built by somebody who had built mobile apps and all sorts of other apps, and it's already one of the higher rated from the information we can get, it's one of the more used apps. It's essentially a sort of YouTube-esque video player, since YouTube didn't join into the Apple Pro.
You have a couple of positives you want to bring into the mix?
I would just say that we've been talking about the putative Apple Vision Pro since we started our podcast 4 years ago. So there's a lot of anticipation around this device. I will give to Apple, the Apple marketing machine in action is an incredible thing to behold. And it's great for XR. I love it when Meta does it. I love it when Apple does it. Let's evangelize this new medium, because a lot of people still don't understand what it is. We think they do because you're here in this room. You're a very rare person. Everybody else is kind of confused, but less so now that the Apple marketing machine has had at it.
Right.
The other thing is, we were saying in 2020, I'll bet you the number one thing it has to be great at is media consumption.
Right. Because it, like we said, it's really a Mac environment, and it's built by people that are not primarily thinking about gaming and interactive. They're thinking about a media landscape. So, watching movies, watching these sort of spatialized kind of videos, and being able to use the cameras on your iPhone 15 or the cameras in the device to capture spatial memories are pretty genius, right? I mean, Apple has 5,000 patents sitting in that thing, and they've been working on a version of it for about 16-17 years. So this is not like 5 minutes ago that they've been trying to think about.
Well, since the spatial memory thing isn't quite there yet, maybe this is a good moment to segue to the part of this show that we call Dear Tim.
Dear Tim. Now, before we... Well, let's bring her out.
All right, yeah. Dear Tim.
And we'll do this.
We're going to write a letter to Tim Cook together.
We're going to go. Now, this is what I warned some friends of mine. This is a little bit dangerous for all of us. So here we go. Now there's our drum roll. Now, as we're doing our wardrobe change, we have some confetti. We also promised that we would ask the audience to take a vote on if Roni should continue to be wearing the Vision Pro and majority rule. So if you think you should keep wearing it the whole time, raise your hand. And if you think you should take it off now, raise your hand. All right, well, Roni, keep it on, brother.
Wait, why do people want him to take it off? They want to see Roni's face?
You don't want to see the red burn marks right now.
Okay, so...
You see his googly eyes?
All right, swords are out.
The swords are out. So this is a little bit of our odd, job interview for Apple. And we tried to figure out how would we get to Tim Cook in the most diplomatic way to communicate how much we love and admire what they have done with this device, but that we also have a litany of things that we think are very concerning and need to be altered, repaired, and advanced. And maybe there's some people on the Apple team here because they come to South by.
Right.
So I have my
They could find our resumes on LinkedIn.
Charlie, I think they're jamming my system as we speak.
The notes. And I'm going to spend 5 minutes, and then we're going to get into this debate. Okay. So the first thing is I'm going to use this term that a lot of you, I think, will understand called balance. Does anybody understand the concept of the fact that if you build a tremendous amount of tech and tech density on the front of a device, and here we are in the year 2024, and this is not the first VR or XR device that's ever been built. If you want something that's fairly heavy, because what they're doing with this Minority Report kind of amazement takes a lot of tech, and it's pretty dense. So it's very weighty. It's much more weighty than a Quest 3 and other things. It's all front-loaded. If you look at what Roni is doing, it is not comfortable. He can tell you. And I've been wearing it for a long time. It is not comfortable.
It bruised the bridge of my nose.
We did it. The logical place to make it feel like it's floating is to take some of the weight and put it on the back of the device. And there's very smart engineering ways to do that in terms of build a beautiful curved little soft battery that can go here when you need it here, and it can be slid off or put in your pocket when you're sitting in your first class airplane seat and watching a movie.
It would get too hot.
Well,
I would think the battery, if you put the battery there.
Well, yeah, I mean, these are all solvable problems. but they need to be solved. And they have been solved by many other VR devices.
Or really, if you are going to do this, right, everybody knows this. It's super familiar to me because we did something like this. So if you're going to move weight off the head, I think...
Yeah, this is an important...
There's good, bad, ugly, and inexcusable. And I grew up loving Apple. The one inexcusable here is if you're going to have the tether and you're going to have this anyway, why did you leave the weight here?
Right.
And it's weird because if you're going to copy that part, do it properly.
So it's a little bit of a head scratcher to us, literally, right? This idea of an external battery pack in 2024 doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to us. Now,
if you're going to move the weight, though, it makes a lot of sense. But if you're going to leave the weight, then it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So that's the big one, right?
Another spatial computing company did that.
The weird thing about it, and I will say, I mean, I worked at HP, so I also worked at a company that built headsets, and we launched the HP Reverb G2 and many other headsets, and Omnicept, and many other award-winning headsets. And so I do think it's... It is interesting and surprising choice to have a pack. That said, for most of the people that I've spoken with, because the Quest 3, the Quest ecosystem, about 70% of the content is games, and here about 70% of the content so far, again, 6 weeks in, is apps or just apps, and then another like 10 to 20% is entertainment. So you're not, the way that people are currently using it, they're not moving around as much, and so they're often using it for email or work or productivity, and so it doesn't interfere as much as some other as it would with other headsets.
Well, you got to unzip your jacket so they can see.
So people haven't
you're
said.
You're ruining the plan.
Yeah.
From the users I've talked to, they haven't been as concerned about the pack as I think people, like sort of insider baseball is.
That's very smart.
And how much of that is brand power, though? I mean, we have to give Apple
credit for
having...
I think a lot of what Apple does is brand power.
It's an amazing brand with huge brand power that if you love it, it doesn't almost matter what they would do.
A huge fan community, which I think is and those of us who've worked at other companies building headsets or created companies, that's one of the reasons of excitement for them entering the ecosystem, because it will bring so many more people to experience spatial computing for the first time.
Yes. So there's two more pieces of this puzzle that we are kind of, these are our Dear Tim moments. The other one is this. So there's a lot of smarts in that, but there's a lot of not so smart. And the not so smart is every time I would put somebody in this to show them because of my work, I would say, okay, now please understand and listen to me very clearly and watch my lips. When you hold it, when I give you the device, when you put it on your face and take it off, do not hold it by this part. Only hold it by the metal part because it's $4,000 and it will drop and break if you hold it by this part. Now, great idea, the magnet. But it needs to be a much stronger magnet if you're going to do that, right? The light seal works well, but it's a problem. Do you guys agree?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and then the last piece, and then we can go into the open debate, is what I would love to know from Apple is how much weight and dynamics go into the kind of groovy, cool, sort of, front display that gives you kind of the creepy eyes. And that's fine, and it was an interesting design choice. But at the end of the day, if it added weight and cost to this, which I suspect it did, I don't get it. I just feel like I want the thing to be as light and balanced as possible, and the gimmickry doesn't buy me anything right now. So that's my laundry list. It's not very long, but it's significant for a first-gen device, and I think all those things need to be addressed in a very positive way. So hopefully Tim and other engineers, like you have to imagine somewhat an Apple, somewhere in this sort of universe of everybody reporting up to Tim, would raise their hand and go, yeah, but if you put some weight on the back, it won't feel as heavy on the front. How do they miss that? I just don't understand.
I think they probably thought, the accessory ecosystem.
There's two straps, aren't there?
There is. So you're right. That's a good
counterpoint. There's two straps that it comes with.
There's a second strap. It has a top strap. It doesn't really work. It tries to lift some of the weight off. So maybe it was an afterthought that someone was like, you know, we better ship with a secondary strap. Because, I mean, this strap is cool. The design work is great on it. It's very comfortable when you tile it down. And if you're sitting back like this, it's fine. But if you wear it like this for any length of time, it's not.
If it's a productivity device, having to tilt your head back is
all the time is not
optimal.
Great. You're postulating.
Well, I just think that I think making things for your face is hard because all our faces are different, and so if you ask 10 different people, there'll be a whole bunch of different answers on whether or not something is actually comfortable on their face, and so Apple I'm sure did a ton of user testing.
Let's ask the audience, right? There's a lot of people have worn it. Like, I don't feel like I'm saying anything that's so hyper-radical that this is the first time you've heard it or felt it yourself. So if you feel like it could be better balanced and less perception of heaviness and weight on the front of your face, I guess just show it by a show of hands. So
you see it's not on their phone.
Was it comfortable?
Okay,
was it comfortable for are there people for whom they feel that it's very comfortable for their for them?
So, Roni, we haven't even...
Not very many.
We haven't even gotten you
going. Some people, though.
Yeah, Roni, go.
Roni, come on, man. Let it rip.
Well, the reason I wanted to wear it, first of all, I want to compliment before I go into the rip part. Like, anyone who works in this kind of engineering, this is really hard stuff. I would say that engineering this is actually harder than working on something like SpaceX, because we already went to the moon. We already did all those things. No one's ever fully cracked this problem. The number of subcomponents and subsystems are actually, in what we did at Magic Leap, and I'm sure what's happening at Apple and Meta, it's like equal to the number of subsystems in a Saturn V. It's like that insane, and the number of simultaneous problems you have to solve are worse than electric car problems. It's just like one of the hardest problems. And it's why some of the biggest companies in the world have spent somewhere between $40 to $80 billion each to date, and will probably spend north of $100 billion each. So one of the criticisms is if you're going to spend that much, like as a startup, raising a few billion is like the outer edge of what you can hope for. And when you compete with people spending 40, 60, 80 billion, you do expect more than this. So I think if you look at the order of magnitude of spend to date, and the fact that we're not in 2012, but it's 2024, I think that, especially if you've been in the trenches, I think there's a higher expectation. So one of the things that I wanted to wear on stage and talk about was, I feel incredibly disconnected from all of you right now. Like, I don't actually feel like I'm here. I could be back home sitting on my couch because the video that I'm seeing of everyone is worse than sometimes being at home on Zoom because it's much more blurry. It's much more grainy. It feels like I'm looking at the world through gauze. And it feels like I'm not even here. It's like there's a strange. It's like I feel like I could be telepresent in Mexico or Paris right now. So that part of like disconnecting me from the reality is like I think breaking one of the tenets of augmented reality. I think it's got some really good things as a virtual reality device. Mm-hmm. But I think the interesting thing was I wanted to understand, like, what is the best in the world video pass through AR feel like today versus true see the world direct? If you actually see the world directly through AR, and there's a few companies that have done that, including what we did at Magic Leap, there's a magic in actually seeing the world through your own eyes with clarity, and that magic is completely not present when you're looking at the world through gauze. And this is, like, much, much better than, like, what Meta has done when the early black and white stuff. So this is, like, the best after tens of billions have been spent. So that part, I feel like you've got to go back to this. I mean, this has got to be the end game. You know, where we could see the world directly, this is the form factor, this is the weight, and we've got to get on that path. And I hope Tim and Mark and others who are in the game, including the company I founded, I hope they all like realize we've got to go to this North Star. This is like going off the road into the wrong direction. Even though it has some amazing components, this is never going to be all day, every day for the world. It just won't.
So, and because your dog in the hunt was all about pass-through mixed reality. That was the device you designed. It started
with
see-through mixed reality. Like, it's not video cameras that you see the world. It's your eyes that you see the world. And that was in a very important belief structure that you have and still hold to.
Like, look at the gap. This is about 110-degree diagonal field of view. We built a pass-through with 30x less dollars that got to 70 degrees. There's a gap of, like, 30 degrees. And you're telling me with another $40 billion you can't solve that? Like, I just don't buy that. So I feel like that hopefully this is a push because we all want this to happen. I think we're on stage because we're super enthusiastic. I wanted the field to happen because I want to be able to make amazing. I'm sure most of you, you don't want to make the film projector. You want to make amazing new things. Like yesterday we talked about story worlds. I want to be able to make amazing story worlds on incredible devices that look like this. We want a billion people using something.
Right, so that's your Dear Tim moment. You want to get that information to Tim.
And Mark. And
everyone in the space.
Like, we want this to be amazing, but
Sundar.
Please get back on the North Star.
Sundar also.
And Sundar. I mean, they had their chance.
I think they're coming back with Samsung. Yeah?
Well, it's
we'll comment on them.
It's clearly a developer version.
Yeah.
There's no content for it. If you buy it, you're supposed to make the content.
Right.
And it's been marketed as something for consumers, and there are lots of people who spend $5,000 on Apple stuff.
Sure.
Reportedly 200,000 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Apple is touting that as a huge success and claims that they can't make them fast enough.
Well, I think it fits in this really interesting hybrid, right? We all know that it's a developer product based on its price tag and its deliverable. We also know that there is this fandom around Apple that is not price sensitive, and many people that can't afford it, that don't use it for any professional version, but want to have the coolest, hottest toy around. Like we often joked in our little worlds that there's a mapping that if you own a high-end Tesla, not a 3, but a high-end
Roadster.
You've bought one of these. It's a direct one-to-one correlation.
If you bought a Cybertruck, you bought
four of these things, yes.
So I guess that begs the question, if this is the developer version, what's the iPhone version that we all should actually buy?
It feels like the price point, be interesting, Joanna and Roni, should be sub $2,000, because that's kind of, if you didn't get it on a contract, what your iPhone actually cost you if you got the Pro version. So it's a couple of grand. It feels like over time, because Apple is in the refinement business, right? They used to kind of keep it all secret until it was super refined. This is 80% refined. The last 20% is a couple years away. We see the next gen sort of version of this, I think.
I don't know, Ted. I mean, if their direction is this, we're not a couple years away. I mean, the question is, what's going on behind the scenes? And is this just something to get out there? I do have to say something because, like, I don't know how long we're into this. Like,
we're halfway through.
I'm 6'2". I played football in high school. This thing is on my neck. Like, it is heavy. And I just don't understand. I'm a biomedical engineer, so I'm going to rail on this for, like, 2 minutes. We obsessed about that when we were building it. We were, like, so worried about biomechanics. And anyone that has been in the field for the last decade, and the virtual reality has been around for, like, decades. Yeah. Like, there's so many devices you could wear and understand what it means, not to the neck of a 6'2". Big guy, but a 5'3", you know, 5% female. You know, you're 120 pounds. You're 5'3". This is not something you should wear in your neck. Well, and if it's going to be like, I'm going to be productive working all day, what are you thinking? What about the other 50%? Like the whole human factor side. It's like everything I grew up loving about them is completely missing in this design decision. I just don't understand.
No, we completely agree, and this is kind of why we did this. We knew this was a risk. We knew it was a little goofy.
I'm getting a message. You were about to be cut off from the Apple.
But we decided that the best way to at least get the word out, and maybe this can get through our friends at South By or through some of you to somebody at Apple, is like, maybe you should watch that thing on stage, Tim, and listen a little bit in a very positive way. You know, we're not trying to bash this thing to death. We think it's great in many ways.
We're doing a good job of that.
Ted, I think being able to say this with credibility, like having built stuff like this and knowing how hard it is, and knowing how many difficult design choices, this wasn't a hard one. There's so many difficult design choices, but understanding biomechanics is one of the first things you do. So that part is just incredibly confusing. They'll never answer us on that one, but hopefully someone hears it and the next gen will not have
it. Or at least be better.
It has to do with who it was tested on and what their feedback was, right? Like what all of the user testing that they did.
101 human factors. We hired a woman, she was amazing, who did human factors for wearable devices, like the best in the country. And the first thing we did was a study of the 5% female to the 95% male, the biomechanics of the cervical spine. And we thought, oh, of course, Apple and others who we thought we were competing against, they probably were going to hire all of those people. So we better like over-rotate on that. This was like, did somebody forget to do that in the requirements document? Like, this is for a geeky engineer. It's one of the first things you would do in designing an XR system. Map out the weight allowance on the head of the 5% female, and you can't be worse.
I do know that there is already kind of an underground ecosystem that is working on a modification. Yeah. There's a lot of developers.
Yeah, peripherals.
Independently.
People building. It's a whole opportunity for peripherals.
Right. So it's developers. Coming. Now, will it be as refined as an Apple first party thing? No way. But at least it'll attempt to start to solve the problem, and maybe Apple will get the message and go, you know what? Maybe we should do that.
Can I say one good thing, though, because I don't want to just think I'm railing? I've got a giant screen open right now.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have this, like, gauzy film of looking at all of you where you're all, like, blurry and mushed, the giant screen is actually super high res. So the non-augmented reality, the virtual reality part, is bright and amazing. So it's a really good but very heavy virtual reality device, and they don't want to call it that, but that part's awesome. Like, I'm going to go to the moon in a second. I'm just going to be on the moon with a huge screen. I'm going to watch, like, Superbad as this is going on, and you guys will all just fade into the moon. But that part's cool. The virtual reality part, I found to be really awesome, except for the fact that it's hurting my neck. The rest of it, as a VR device, is great.
So it seems like whenever the Vision Pro 2 comes out, that we'll be in an ecosystem where we have a duopoly between Meta and Apple. So one question is there room for a third? Is Xreal even going to be able to make a sound, right? Xreal's, I don't know, $150 million, $200 million company going up against Apple and Meta.
Right. Now, so what he's talking about, and Charlie refers to this as what they call screen reflector devices or screen extension devices. So you connect your phone today with a cable, very soon, because of our friends at Qualcomm, wirelessly, to a device that is lightweight. It's typically using 1080p, what they call birdbath optics. So you get kind of what Roni's looking at with an optical pattern, like, you know, just
it's,
like looks like
it's
glasses.
Like $350 or $400.
And it's a couple hundred bucks. Yeah. And it works great. Now, it is nowhere near the Minority Report experience of this. This is magic.
No,
this
no.
is full
that's,
on magic.
That's for media consumption.
Right. But it works great, and it looks high res, and it's great, and it's very inexpensive, right? The thing you and I were talking about at the bar last night, which is an interesting piece to kind of bring into the puzzle, is do you believe, and I think Roni and I might differ on this a little bit, and the audience would be interested in the Q&A part, do you believe there is one device to master them all? Or do you believe that the ecosystem that we already have with computers, you know, we all have mobile device form factor, iPad-ish device form factor, laptop form factor, and very often we use, especially if we work in some industry that requires compute, we use advanced desktop computing, right? And we have kind of four or five devices, every one of us, and we use them almost on a daily basis. So the question, had enough, Roni, finally? Yeah,
they wore him down.
The question for Roni, Joanna, and Charlie, and eventually for you guys too, is do you think one size fits all? And I saw, you know, a lot of you shaking your head already. Or do you think there'll be like a bunch of different ones that you'll have for different purposes, just kind of like our compute ecosystem today? That's the interesting question.
Well, as there is with phones, right, you can buy one of these bad boys for $99 and get the internet and most of the benefits. So that's one end of the spectrum. Or you could buy the 15 Pro a la carte or off of a plan.
$1,500, yeah. Something like that, yeah. So it's a big spectrum.
Yeah, so don't we think it's going to repeat?
It's just about, like, what kind of screen do you want and what's the proper environment for the screen?
Well, and it's the use case, right, the jobs to do, as they say. So I believe that we'll continue to have a variety of different environments that or different hardware that we use for different moments.
We're in consensus.
Different moments at different times.
I'm going to argue with you guys, though.
Yeah, go. You have the counter.
So I think something like this that could just sit in your pocket, that will have powerful compute, and we know there's going to be wireless connectivity. We were testing it. Companies that could spend $40 billion more for sure can get there. And what I have on right now, the wraparound is better field of view by far than what I was wearing. And can you get immersive at retina resolution or better in something this thin or small? Absolutely. I know we can. And I know we were doing it with less money.
Well, you've seen
so
it,
companies
right?
with
you've
tens of millions of dollars can totally get there. So the question is, like, are they putting things out there in the middle period, what I call the Gemini period, before we get to Apollo? But Apollo cannot look like that, right? Like, late this decade into the 2030s, I think if you got something like this and something like Ray-Bans, and you're going to get retina resolution, wirelessly talking to a small thing in your pocket and your watch, there's no reason to have any other devices. You'll be able to do everything on it. And so, I think that's the beginning of what you see on the Vision Pro. The Vision Pro, from a software side, is showing if you get to this form factor, it's your phone, it's your tablet, it's your computer, it's your everything.
So let's shift the conversation a little bit to AI. And you're talking about the 2030s, and so here's an alternative version of a wearable, immersive, helpful co-pilot or life-logging device, if you will. And it is sensors, right? Whether they're in your glasses, maybe you don't wear glasses and you have it on your lapel, or and so it knows where you are. It knows what you're doing. It knows what time of day it is. It knows your habits. And there's an audio connection, but there's no display. Why do you need the display at that point?
Yeah, and that's already, like, today proving that out, right? That the audio system, by the way, the audio on this is remarkable. It's crystal clear and beautiful, and I think Steve Jobs would be proud. I think Steve Jobs would not be proud of this, in my opinion. I think he would be telling people, keep on it, keep working on it, keep iterating on it, don't release it like
this. I think what an interesting thing to think about at that point, if you think about the ecosystem. So the Oculus, Facebook, Meta have all the same company, but under, you know, different names at different points, have released 10 headsets already in the market and had about 85% of the market. And, you know, if you think about, you know, why they went in so early, you know, I think their thought was that there was an ecosystem of iOS and Android, and that ecosystem disintermediated them from being direct to consumer, and wanted to make sure to have one of those two pole positions in this next wave. Whether it's the only device that we use, or whether there's multiple devices, they wanted to have that direct ecosystem, which is why they put in such heavy investment so early and have already been out into the market now with 10 devices. And so Apple came in now. You know, they could have come in earlier. They could have waited to the. I mean, they're coming in from a winning position where, you know, they have a position to potentially lose, right? They're not trying to get at a position. Whereas the Facebook or Meta ecosystem wanted to make sure that they were there and they were ready to potentially take one of those two positions, assuming we'll have. Well, that it looks like a Mac and PC, or looks like an Android and
Roni is the guy. Sorry, Roni is the guy who said AI is what XR has been waiting for. So now you're talking about 2030. We're talking about AI. You're talking about all day, every day wraparound glasses. Give us a picture of what a day looks like with such a device.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I have a bias because I'm working on AI right now in Synthpy. But one of the things that I totally see happening, you could prototype it now, but I could see this mid to late, you know, late 20s, early to mid 30s. First of all, a device like this, even though this can do it, you're not going to use it all day, will sense everything. Mm-hmm. And I could see everyone clearly, and you imagine go from full transparency to full opacity and everything in between. Mm-hmm. So imagine we just have that. So how does AI play a role? Now imagine an AI that, like, really understands me, and my privacy and my data is assured. It's not streaming to a big company, it's like yours. So now it knows you and knows your likes and knows everything around you, understands the people around you, but you've got this data privacy. When you have this on, it's like your IQ and your awareness of the world and your powers are gonna be 10x, 100x. Everything you do in your profession is gonna be hyper-amplified. When you take it off, it'll be like someone who takes off their glasses and has really bad vision and everything's blurry and you can't see. You put it back on and it's like you know everything. People ask you things, you'll get answers in real time. Your awareness. Now think about how good AI is right now in 24, which is astounding. It's going to be completely insane by the end of the decade. And into the 2030s, we'll be unrecognizable to the kids who are walking around wearing things like this, whose IQs are orders of magnitude more than we are today. We'll feel like Neanderthal, even worse. Like the separation between the AI amplified people and the people who are just normal biologic wet world will be completely different. I think the best way to consume it will be wearing this because it sees what I see, it senses where I am, it knows what's happening. Mm-hmm. I don't need to wear a pin. It'll have the same sensing, but better, because I'll know exactly where my eyes are, where my attention goes. The key thing is, who controls that AI? Is it decentralized? Is it centralized? Is there privacy and control? Are you submitting everything about your life to a major power, or do you control it? I think that's going to be the big decision, not if it's going to get there. I think it's 100% going to get
so
there.
So, Roni, what... Yes, you should clap for that.
Woo!
So, Roni, what you're referring to, and I think... whether wittingly or unwittingly, everybody in the audience knows this already, is that we have this little pocket superpower thing that there's one, you know, on Charlie's lap there. And we all know innately that its power isn't in the device. Its power is in the giant computer in the sky, right? Or the many of them that...
What we used to call the AR cloud.
When we say giant computer in the sky, what are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about today's version, pre-AI moving into AI, which are these servers that live all over the world that deliver all that...
It was content. A Norman Greenbaum song that needs to be redone, the giant computer in the sky.
Computer in the sky.
Going up to... Anyway.
So... we know this innately. We do this every second of every day almost, is we ask our little pocket computer to call up to the mothership and tell us what's going on. And what you're saying, and I think where it goes, is if you can de-weight the entire system by just allowing it to be the bare components that need to drive the visual and audio, and everything else is the feed for, similar to this, you can get to that device,
okay,
right?
And compute at the edge.
Yeah, I mean, everything.
It all moves.
And you know what? Until that point, if you're going to tether something with a little cable, put all the weight down here.
Down there.
You can have this in between.
We 100% agree.
So, as most of you know, at this point in the South by Southwest, there is a Slido feature to the South by Southwest app. I wasn't going to do a lot of questions. We have 15 minutes left. But Hunter Lane gave us such a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question.
And it's so apropos to where we are in our talk. I thought I would just read
First of all, was this good? Did you enjoy this nonsense? Is it a good idea to
there you go.
Take
Charlie,
it out on the edge a little
bit? You can't
ignore
the Tim question,
so,
though.
Yeah. That, how do you
Tim
expect...
Tim C from Mountain. Sorry.
You win. How do you expect XR platform content strategy to shift to the age of AVP and spatial computing? And this is a great question because right now there really is no content.
Yeah.
So where are we going with that?
And is it as much of a shift, or do we already understand an ecosystem in iOS and Android that people all around the world build all kinds of apps? Very few of them actually reach what we call escape velocity, right? And actually become marketable and profitable and anybody cares about. But there are hundreds of millions of apps. When an iPhone first launched, there were three.
What was your favorite?
My favorite app of all time?
Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Sorry. We do have a little. Okay. So this is another Dear Tim moment. Roni and his team at Weta, and there's our friend Richard who helped create it, his team at Weta Workshop, for the small amount of people that saw it, there was a mixed reality entertainment gaming piece called Dr. G, Dr. Gorbatz. Did anybody get a chance to play it? Just a few of you, right?
At LeapCon.
Dr. Gordbortz.
Dr. G, I'll call it. For me, particularly as someone that does this a lot, it was one of the most important, and still today, one of the best created and most important mixed reality interactive pieces ever made. It took full advantage of a spatial universe, and you lived inside a video game. Ernest Cline would be proud to see it.
So
we would love to see it on the Vision Pro.
Yes, we would.
I'm making the open call.
Since most people didn't do the experience, just as an aside, it used the room tracking in the headset to sort of create portals on your walls and on the ceiling. So the game really was all around you and coming out of the floor and the wall, and you could walk up to the wall and look into the portal. And so it was a great use of space, which we
spatial
don't really
computing.
See in any other medium.
Right.
I never
so
know where we heard
come
of the
to
term spatial computing before, but it was definitely a spatial computing experience.
So
now
another
we get
question.
To
we got another question. Is there something specific? Where did that go? Is there something specific to AR and VR that is so hard to develop for that one has to release a prototype as Apple did? What are those unique challenges? That is also, I can't see whose question that was. It's a good question. Let's do it.
Yeah, so it's a great question. We don't have a lot of time. I'll jump into it really fast. One of the issues is that you have the human body, so I'm a biomedical engineer, and you need to interface with the brain, our neurologic system, our ophthalmologic system, the weight, the spine, all of that. You're putting something on the head, and it is a brain-computer interface. It's not a normal computer. Your mobile phone is a computer. A tablet is a computer. This is a brain-computer interface. Ignoring that connection between computing and biology is what we're actually talking about here. A lot of companies ignored it. It's very hard to ignore. In fact, you cannot ignore it and be successful in the end. Mm-hmm. That's one of the most difficult things. The other piece, it's like a satellite. Because you have so little weight that your body wants up here, and because your eyes have evolved into working into what's outside of you, it's called a light field. Light field physics is completely non-trivial. Your eyes evolved into light field physics. That is not what's happening in this headset. Generating a true light field that your body can respond to appropriately is insanely difficult. It is one of the hardest, most difficult problems in computing. It's just a non-trivial problem. And that's just like one of about 290 things you have to get right at the same time to get to what we're calling Apollo.
So Jeremy is asking about killer apps. I've been saying for, I don't know, years that what XR needs is our Game of Thrones moment or our Sopranos moment where people are like, I have to do this no matter what the cost is. And we don't have that yet. And I don't think, as great as media consumption is on the Vision Pro, I don't think they have that either.
I would say that that's potentially why it was released at this point.
You know, to cultivate developers to find it.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I think you could have been done like publicly, or could have been done in developer
Right. So
labs.
Maybe but one of those developers has been, new right. Instagram.
There's
and
already
new
about a thousand apps on. Yeah. In the first 6 weeks, and so we're still early, but you know, if 200,000 people have purchased it, some percentage of, decent percentage of those developers will be, every day we'll be seeing new things come out and hopefully get to that killer app.
I think potentially the killer app, even though you may argue it's not an app, is what will evolve with spatial photography and spatial video.
Memories.
With the device, right. Your baby's first steps, a very important speech, an important world event that is captured in a spatial environment, not just 3D, but actually a spatial environment, because with the spatial capabilities of a device like this and other things from our friends at Meta and others, there's a whole new realm of what photography, videography and cinematography will be that I think will be very important.
If you haven't played with the new photogrammetry apps, and I'm going to call out Polycam because I use it all the time, all of a sudden we are able to capture not a flattened reproduction of what was seen through the lens, but we can now capture the space around
the actual geometry.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think that'll be extraordinary.
And what this does also, again, as somebody who worked at a computing company, is that it drives people back into the Apple ecosystem. So the number of developers I've talked to, traditionally VR developers worked on PC. The number of developers who are saying, oh, now I'm buying a MacBook, now I have to buy the new Apple 15 because I want to be able to do the spatial capture. So, now I'm moving from Google Photos over to Apple Photos because I want to have my photos there at my fingertips. So it's also continuing to reinforce their ecosystem, which is the point of having these companies with so many products for the company.
Can I add one quick thing to the? I think a really interesting killer app is going to be watching a movie on it. If you remove the weight part, is kind of amazing. And I think if you take the next step, which is like sitting on the moon, which is full immersive mode, is amazing. And you go, what happens beyond movies? We have a talk on that yesterday. I think Story Worlds, which is like a parallel thing to games. It's not immersive gaming, is going to be incredible. Like, there's going to be directors, and Favreau started to get at it. Like, he gave me 3 minutes of a rectangle of, like, a story that felt like the beginning of something really cool, and then it ends. Like, I want to see that whole thing emerge. Yeah. The sort of cinematic reality spatial movies
Yeah. And I think the dinosaurs are in your environment.
They're in your environment,
yeah,
but also
and you can interact with them.
It's like, how do you tell a story that's not just that 2D world? And it's not just the Avatar 3D movie in the IMAX theater, but it is potentially all around you, spatial cinema. This device could open that door. And you got to give like the greatest directors big budgets to really understand what could happen.
Yeah, and there's a few nuggets in the device now that you can see where that's going. There's this woman that does this high wire walking stuff. And everybody I put in it was like, whoa, like this is crazy. Because the image is so good. It's very beautiful and cinematic and resolution works at that level. The Encounter Dinosaurs thing is good. And then there's actually a longer form thing in the Apple TV platform that actually is like a series of that. And the Alicia Keys music video thing is also really good because you feel like you're at the recording stage.
Best 360 I've
ever
seen. It's
really interesting.
Or the sporting events.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But again, here we are talking about like sort of traditionalist media kind of taking a little bit of a step forward, right?
But this is how technology succeeds, because it takes something we're familiar with, something we're already doing, like shopping or sending letters, and it makes it way easier. Yeah.
And remember, when you're in the device, what's kind of great about it, if you're a Mac, ridiculous Mac guy like me, is everything that you use in your Mac is still happening on your face. So when your texts come in, there they are. Like, you don't have to do some weird third-party craziness and try and link your computer and your phone and stuff. It's just all automatic. When you go into any environment that you've ever been on in Wi-Fi on your phone, it automatically knows, because it knows you, it automatically links to that Wi-Fi. All these little Apple-y things that Apple is just better at, the refinement level, is great. When you set it into this mode where you want to mirror your computer into the device, it's completely seamless. It's perfect.
That, by the way, is a tough part for Meta, right?
Really tough.
Because the Android ecosystem could, in theory,
it's more fragmented,
bring
right?
you like that. No, but the, you know, if you have an Android phone,
yeah, you could go
you
there.
You can go there, but like Apple is going to bring you phone, tablet, Mac there. That's that hard lock of the ecosystem.
Really, they spend a lot of time on it, and it works great.
Well, Meta does capture a decent amount of our time between Instagram and WhatsApp and Facebook and I think those are their main. They did Workplace, but they haven't integrated those as seamlessly into the Quest experience.
That's what Apple excels at.
They've done it in a much more clunky way, but they do have an opportunity there. But they have yet to do it.
Yeah, they have. They're not the automatic Windows through, right? versus iOS.
Well, we're going to do speed questions.
Speed questions. Well, somebody's asking about Enterprise XR and whether the Vision Pro will have an impact on that, and the answer is it already has.
Yeah.
So
medical healthcare, they're starting to experiment.
I'm really hoping that this is going to re-jumpstart.
Things that people were doing with HoloLens in the past.
Yes.
Seen articles about surgeries and things like that being used with Apple Vision Pro.
If it pulls your neck down the whole time, it's going to be problematic.
So the industry has been trying to scale. Has been trying to scale Enterprise for the 8 years I've been covering it, and it is happening maddeningly slowly, even though the benefits of it are really clear. So it shows how certain industries are going to evolve generationally. You're not going to convince them to change right now because they're too busy doing other things. And despite the best efforts of Accenture and Ernst & Young and other companies that have really leaned into XR, their clients aren't doing it. And it's actually killing the XR segment, the enterprise segment of our business, which for a long time was the healthiest part.
Yeah, we're waiting for that moment, right? And maybe this is part of that moment.
This is an interesting question about journalism.
Go ahead, read it.
It's from Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous. How can journalism evolve in this new landscape? What kind of formats can you imagine?
That's your world, Joanna. You should answer that.
I think it's a super interesting question. We've moved a bit, for better or for worse, often for worse, but to some level of citizen journalism where people are getting their news from people posting things on social media. And I think I can see an interesting use case where people capture in spatial, people with their Apple 15s and 16s, 17s, 18s capture 3D moments, and then you're able to go in and see them. And in a world where things like deepfakes and synthetic media can have a big impact on our understanding of the world and politics, having something that's spatially captured, maybe that you can, we'll see what kind of AI can be layered over it, but potentially could bring you into moments and into spaces and let you know that they're real would be a sort of I like my, this, my optimistic point of view.
I like this
that.
One. This may be our last question because they're going to kick us off at some point.
Yeah.
Seems like Meta is going towards glasses form factor with AI-powered Ray-Ban. Do you see it converging with Quest? That's a good lead into, we've talked a lot about Apple today. We've dissed on them, hopefully in the most positive diplomatic way we attempted to do, and we still left
our resumes things. Are on LinkedIn.
We still left a few things off on the list that we didn't even talk about that they still need to fix. We'll talk about that after. But I want to call out our friends at Meta in the VR world. Charlie and I often talk that without Meta and that huge amount of capital they kept putting into that long game, we would not be as far along in this equation. The Quest 3 is an exceptionally good device, especially when you realize at retail it's only 600 and something bucks. And it has mixed reality capabilities, and it's fairly lightweight, and it is, and you can buy an accessory for today that's a first-party accessory to balance it.
It's 500.
Yeah, let's call it
taxes.
Call it 600 bucks. You know, but it's definitely a lot less than this, right? By order of magnitude.
7X is the video that Zuck put out.
And it is really, really good at a lot of things. If you're willing to kind of live, and we just say it's a little more Windows-y, you know, it's not quite as refined, but it's an exceptionally good device. Now, the thing I will mention to answer that question, and then I'll let everybody else respond to it too, is Meta has teased now some of their employees that report closely to Zuck about this magical new device that they're working on that is the end-all, be-all, and they literally talk about it like the Holy Grail. Like, they're working on this thing that is so much better than a Quest and so much better than a Vision Pro and so much better that it will cure all the ills. Now, will we see it? Do you think that they're really on that track? Maybe this is something for Roni. I think partially they're working really hard, and they've spent a lot of money to figure out how to get something like, kind of like your visor experience. But will they get that right in the first iteration?
I think with the amount of money they've spent, you could get there with about a fifth or a sixth of the money. So I would hope so, right? I mean, like, I think Matthew Ball estimated north of $60 billion some time ago. So they're probably at $80 billion right now. At $80 billion, yes. If they don't, a whole bunch of people there need to be replaced with others who can get it right. Because I know Mark will keep funding until he gets there.
Right.
So I'd like to thank South by Southwest. I'd like to thank Blake Kammerdiner, who is the head of the XR exhibit and talks. I'd like to thank our listeners and especially our sponsors, Zapper, who makes it possible. And I hope you guys enjoy the rest of South by Southwest.
So if you haven't been on This Week in XR, every week we do this. This will be this week's show. And every week we get on, Roni, Charlie, and I, and we dish it up a little bit every week, so please listen.
Shirts for the audience.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wait.
We have giveaways.
Swag.
We're going to throw shirts.
We have swag. You've got 6 seconds to chuck that swag.
If you want one of these collector item shirts,
there's somebody over there that wants.
And you yourself want to ask Tim. Oh, too far. Sorry.
All right.
I know you. I'm trying to get it to you. There you go.
Here we go.
Yes.
Dear Tim.
It's the rock star
moment. Thank you. And thank you, guys.
That's the rock star moment.
Thank you, guys.